to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Our next guest is one of my best friends in the business, John Wilner. At Wilner Hotline, that's where you can find his work. Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News. He is a husband, he is a father, he is a dog owner. What kind of dog do you have, John Wilner?
I have a mini golden doodle that is 87% poodle and 13% golden retriever. And 100% Tasmanian devil.
What's the dog's name?
Dasher. We got Dasher the day after Christmas. So it was either right. Down to Dasher and Comet. We went with Dasher, and it suits his personality because he's completely out of control.
I love it. You can yell that. That's a proper name, though. You can yell that across a dog park, or you not be ashamed of it. Dasher, get over here. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we read that the two syllable names are also a little bit easier for them to kind of pick up.
The dogs are listening. I love it. Hey, so you did an interview earlier today on KJR Radio with our old friend Softy, who's probably wound into a spin right now with the season approaching. What did he want to talk about? What's on like University of Washington's mind?
Well, interestingly, his co-host today, usually it's Dick Fain, but they had Doug Baldwin in, the former Seahawk receiver and Stanford receiver. Stanford. Yeah. And I actually was a Stanford beat writer where Doug played. So we actually talked a lot about, Stanford and the ACC and just the whole, the movement. And Softy wanted to know what I thought about UCLA's prospects in the Big Ten, because it just seems like, I don't know what you think, it seems like the Bruins are in worse position competitively than the other three teams going into the Big Ten. And I think they're going to be a very interesting experiment.
Give me an idea of what you think happens, Stanford and Cal, if we can rope them together. And I tend to believe that the Pac-12 teams are getting an easier path in the Big 12. What about the ACC?
The ACC competitively has more opportunity. I mean, Florida State's usually pretty good. Clemson's usually pretty good, right? But it's not loaded with blue bloods like the SEC or Big Ten. So I think from that standpoint, they would have a chance. The question is whether those schools are capable institutionally of competing, right, and doing what it takes to win at the highest level at the Power Four, right? Because the academic mission is so important at both places that they are just not all in with football the way a lot of schools are. And I'm not sure that in this era you can win without being totally all in.
The UCLA question in the Big Ten, I think I was looking back at UCLA history. It's like they haven't been good in football for a consistent period of time in decades. I kind of am covering my eyes a little bit for Deshaun Foster. Like, it could be ugly.
It could be ugly. They've got the bad combination of, a new coach with a new conference, and certainly their financial situation doesn't give them a lot of flexibility. Their schedule's ridiculous, right? They got to play LSU on the road week three, right in between Big Ten games, I should say. I'm not sure that they've got the personnel to win more than four or five games. I'm just not sure about any of it. But not only this season, longer term. I mean, they're paying Cal $10 million a year in subsidy. They've got massive debt. Institutionally, they have not been all in with football like USC is. It's not as big a part of the culture there. So I do wonder if, not only they're going to struggle this year, but they are going to struggle multiple years. And then if you come in and you're struggling, it's hard to ever get traction in a new conference. I mean, look at Maryland. Maryland's had trouble getting traction in the Big Ten. Bruins could end up looking a little bit like Maryland.
John Wilner is with us. Wilner, this preseason, how has it been different than other preseasons for you?
Well, it's certainly different than the last couple preseasons when there was massive conference realignment news going on in July and August, right? I mean, this was kind of like we had the COVID summer, and then we had the Texas-Oklahoma summer, and then the USC-UCLA summer, and then the Pac-12 kaboom summer. So it's really been since 2019 that college sports has not had some kind of momentous event going on in June and July. So in that respect, it's been kind of nice. I have tried to familiarize myself with the rosters. It's so hard with the transfer portal to keep up with who is where that I've spent a lot of time saying, oh, yeah, that guy, he's there now. There's been a lot of that going on.
Yeah, I'm left kind of looking at expectations, and I want to get to your expectations for a few of the key programs. But Oregon, as the number three ranked team, you know, expanded playoff, everybody's kind of got them penciled in. Where's that line for you of where disappointment is for Oregon's season? And I get it, they haven't kicked off a game, but is it disappointing if they don't make the Final Four? Is it disappointing if they don't make the playoff? Like, where's the line of disappointment for you?
Well, I kind of just try to look at it from the fan standpoint, and I would think that if they don't make the playoff, that's going to be a pretty big disappointment given where the expectations are. I mean, a lot of people think they should be playing for the national title. So, you know, you don't win the Big Ten, that's you know, can understand that. Ohio State's really good too, but then there are you know, there's seven at-large berths. So the Big Ten's going to get a total of three, at least maybe four teams. If Oregon doesn't make the playoff, that is a major disappointment. Once you're in the playoff, I mean, as long as you don't lose to the Group of Five champ in the 5-12 game, you know, I'm not sure that how much of a disappointment it is, you know, how depending on how far you get. But to me, that's the bar. And at 9-3, they're probably on the bubble. Or 10-3, they're probably on the bubble as an at-large. I think if they can get through with two losses, they've got no problem whether they win the Big Ten or not.
Give me an idea. Oregon's win total over under is sitting at 10.5. That is a huge number. You and I talked about this on the podcast, Canzano and Wilner, the podcast, if you want to check out the full episode. But Wilner, give us your Cliff Notes over under on Oregon. Do you still believe they are under 10.5 wins?
I'm going under only because, and that's a regular season, doesn't include the conference championship, that you just have so little margin for error. If you get upset in one game, then you can't lose another. And with Ohio State sitting there, they got a good chance to beat the Buckeyes, but if they lose that game, and, you know, it's probably a 50-50 proposition, right? So if they lose that game, they got to win every other game to hit the over. And I don't know. They got to play Michigan, right? They got to play Washington. It's a tough schedule. So, and a lot of travel, especially in the second half of the season. They're going back and forth cross-country several times. So I would definitely pick the under if I had to do it. If we're 9.5, I would probably go over. But at 10.5, I'm going under.
It's interesting because I've been looking at Washington all year like you have, and I've been waffling back and forth as I saw the number at like 7.5 wins, and I've been kind of trying to figure out, you know, can Washington win 8? You know, where will they be? And then, you know, I went to check their over under, and I was left kind of going, there are some places where their number is at 7, there's some at 7.5. What if I'm having you set the line on the Washington Huskies win total, where are you setting it?
Ooh, I want to try to, if I'm setting the line, I want to try to draw a lot of action on both sides. And I don't think I would be able to do that at 7 because I don't think enough people would take over 7. 7.5, certainly, I don't know who's taking them at over 7.5. I really don't. I don't know. I might set it at 6.5, to be honest.
6.5.
But I'm also kind of skeptical about their situation. They've got one returning starter, new quarterback, offensive line and secondary, which are the positions where you have to have continuity. They don't have much. New coaching staff, new playbook, all the conference situation. Man, I would probably set it at 6.5, but I'm a little bit on the skeptical side.
Well, BetMGM is with you. They have that line moved to 6.5, and that's where it's standing for Jed Fish. And all year, I've been saying, look, I think they could start like 5-1 or 4-1. You know, if everything went well for them, but the second half of their schedule is brutal, and I think it will unravel for them in the final month.
Well, and depth is going to be more important this year than ever, partly because you've got Big Ten teams. Big Ten is a more physical conference than the Pac-12, but also with the playoff, if playoff teams could end up having to play 16, 17 games. So the schools that have the best depth charts have a huge advantage this year compared to previous years. And Washington, there's another case where they got so many new guys and so much inexperience that I really wonder. And we don't really know that Will Rogers is a top tier quarterback. That, you know, he was pretty good at Mississippi State, but he wasn't elite in the SEC, I don't think. So that's another issue for them.
John Wilner with us, WilnerHotline.com, if you want to read his work, Bay Area News Group. Let's focus a little bit on Utah. And, you know, Utah sitting at 9.5 with their win total. I like the over. I think that, 10-2 is within their grasp, but they're so good. You talked about depth. They've got depth. They've got Cam Rising. What fear do you have for them, or where do you see them in the Big 12?
Well, I mean, the big fear is that Cam Rising has another injury. To me, that's number one. But they are so good on the lines of scrimmage, and they've got enough playmakers that I think they're in great position in the Big 12. And that over-under, I would probably take the over there, because it's at 9.5. They should be 3-0 in non-conference. Okay, so that means, can they go 7-2 in the Big 12? They miss a bunch of the best teams in the Big 12. And that's another thing that we should probably address is, with these giant conferences, the schedule rotation is a huge deal. Who you play and who you don't play. And, there's teams in the Big 10 that don't play Ohio State, Michigan, or Oregon. So those teams have got a huge advantage over the teams that do play those schools. And Utah drew a very favorable schedule in the Big 12 rotation. Right? That conference has got four or five teams that should be at the top, and Utah misses a couple of them, both Kansas schools, for instance. They don't play either of them, and that's an advantage for Utah.
John Wilner with us. Oregon State and Washington State are both listed at 7.5. You are bullish, I think, on Washington State and bearish on Oregon State. The Oregon State fans are mad at us, by the way, for our podcast take on their season. But, like I said, you're never going to please anybody with predictions. But, let's go more into that. Let's start with Oregon State. You see some problems on the horizon.
I see a lot of problems for the Beavers. I'd say I'm more bullish on the Cougars than I am on the Beavers, but I'm not super bullish on either of them. I think they've got very difficult situations. They lost, both schools lost a lot of good players through the portal and NIL situation, and they've got this cloud hanging over them, and I do think it could serve as motivation, but I just think it's going to be hard slogging. And one of the differences between Oregon State and Washington State is, Oregon State's got a new head coach, and we don't know if Trent Bray can coach at a high level. The other issue is Oregon State's schedule is tougher because they play Oregon. I think the Cougars have got a chance to win the Apple Cup. I don't think the Beavers have any chance to win the Civil War. So that's another difference between the two. I would definitely take, if I had to bet, I would take the over with the Cougars as opposed to the under, but I would definitely take the under with the Beavers. I am very bearish on the Beavs.
Yeah, and I think, the more, I was on campus on Friday, talked to the president. I was really impressed with her, by the way. We'll talk more about that, another day. But I went over to the stadium and watched them do their walkthrough. And, I expected them to be smaller. I don't know in my mind if I had kind of downgraded them because they lost so much in the portal. They looked better than expected. And I kind of left there, Wilner, going, look, I've talked about getting to bowl eligibility as their bar. And for the Beaver fans who are mad at us, nobody's rooting against Oregon State. If they can get to 7, if they can get to 8, good on them. Everyone's going to celebrate that and say what a great year it is. But I kind of feel like if they can get 6 and they can get bowl eligible and get the exposure they need on the CW, they're going to look back and go, that was a good first year for Trent Bray. Is bowl eligibility in your mind making it?
I think if they can, either of them, bowl eligibility is a winning season. That is a successful season given their circumstance. Absolutely. That will keep them relevant. They are, more important than anything, is relevance. And if they are winning 6 games to become bowl eligible, then they're going to be relevant. And then they're playing in the postseason, and they can use that in recruiting and with the fans. So that to me is the bar for both. Is not the 7.5 over under. It's the eligibility, bowl eligibility. You know, we don't know exactly how good the Mountain West is going to be, and that's the fact that they both have so many Mountain West teams on their schedules is part of the reason that the over under is at 7.5. But I don't know that they're any better than the top 3 or 4 teams in the Mountain West. We're going to have to see. I think that there is definitely a question about that.
John Wilner with us. Wilner, I tweeted earlier today, Ryan Leaf will be joining the CW. He'll be the analyst that takes the place of Chase Daniels. He'll be along with Ted Robinson for the Pac-12 games on the CW. Leaf speaking out, upset at ESPN. He says he was pulled off the ESPN games after criticizing Kirk Herbstreit, after criticizing Pat McAfee. I wanted to listen to this clip. Here is Ryan Leaf talking about McAfee and Herbie.
Live in this, high platform, you know. They get criticized all the time, but boy, God, are they overly sensitive, narcissists.
So they probably complain to someone, then a coordinating producer calls you and says they're going to take you off of games?
Yeah, so the coordinating producer calls me, and I said, well, you're not making this decision. Who's making this decision? And he said, well, someone above my pay grade. And I said, well, you need to have the someone above your pay grade call me. And so they did. And by that time, I had confirmed with people on why it happened. And so when I got them on the phone, I was just like, yeah, I think this is about right. I think you and I, we don't have shared values. And so I think this is probably the proper decision. And, I get it. I get it. You got $85 million, people scaring you. You know, you gotta fall in line. And so I understand that.
Ryan Leaf's got a little stray dog in him, and I like him for that, Wilner. What do you make of kind of the narrative nationally? Herbstreit, McAfee, ESPN, Fox, Big Noon, they play a big role in setting the table for what people are talking about and perception. And then you got a guy like Ryan Leaf off to the side saying things that are a little bit outside of school, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly admire him for calling it like he sees it, right? But you do that, and you got to know that there's a chance that they're going to cut you loose. And that's kind of how the big media companies work. And I think if Ryan Leaf had been working for Fox and something similar had happened with one of their, dispute with one of their analysts, I think probably the same thing would have happened, right? Those companies want to present somewhat of a united front. But they clearly are, the chess, the grandmasters in the chess game of college football, in terms of the money, the conference realignment, kind of dictating what happens at the 40,000 foot level. I mean, they are running the sport in a lot of ways, and ESPN to a greater extent because they have got the playoff or, what is said on their studio shows, I think it has a lot of influence, to be honest with you, about where things go throughout the course of the season with the narrative and then how things go with the playoff selections and all that.
What happens to Lincoln Riley and USC this season?
Well, I don't think he's going to get fired. I know there's some speculation out there, but I think they'll be good enough for that to be avoided. They do have a tough schedule, though, and I know I talk about the schedule a lot, but they play LSU on the road and Notre Dame. So they got 3 non-conference games. One of them's LSU, one's Notre Dame. And they're also playing Penn State and Michigan, right? And so could they get to 9-3? I think that's a stretch. I really do. I think somewhere in the 7-5, 8-4 window is probably most likely for them. I don't think Lincoln Riley's going to get fired. If they got a winning record, I don't see them making that move after his third year. But, boy, there will be a lot of pressure on him in 2025.
Can they be better than expected? Playing as, you know, if you want to zig when everyone is zagging, so to speak, can USC surprise this season?
Well, the way that happens is that their defense is markedly better. They have a new defensive coordinator, Danton Lynn, who they, you know, hired away from UCLA in a very much of a big brother, little brother move. So if you say their defense is going to be substantially better and their offense is going to be incrementally worse than it was with Caleb Williams, you know, then that's the case for USC getting to 9-3, 10-2. I'm not sure I buy that their offense is going to be only incrementally worse because Caleb Williams was so good and Miller Moss does not have a whole lot of experience. Lincoln Riley certainly is a very good offensive coach and play caller, but I think there's going to be a pretty good regression on offense, and so that means that it's probably canceling each other out and they end up somewhere in the 7-5, 8-4 range.
John Wilner, you're the best. We have a new episode of Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. It's coming out this week. We're going to take questions from listeners at Wilner Hotline on Twitter, at John Canzano BFT on Twitter. Fire us your best questions. Wilner, I will catch up with you later, man. Thanks for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
There he goes. Probably off to walk the dog, so to speak. Should try that again. There he goes. Off to walk the dog, so to speak. Coming up, Rasheed Wallace has said some wild things in his time. Has he said the wildest thing ever? I'll play his audio clip in the next segment.